Welcome back to Real Insight Keen, Insights for the Semi-Observant. I'm your host, as always, Headphones Neil, bringing you episode number 112, Interstellar. So, this week's episode goes without saying, it's a movie that released recently in two theaters by Christopher Nolan, so I had a chance to watch it this past weekend, so I thought I would do my review. Overall, a pretty good movie. Worth checking out. So I will get right into the review. A couple of different things going on, but and then I'll after the insight, as always, a summary and the positives and negatives, and then actually a bit of recent information that I found out right before I started recording the show. So I'll go through that a little bit as well in case you hear reviews of this that particular specific information. So that is in and upcoming episodes as well. So with that, I'll jump right into the review. So Interstellar released in the United States on November 7th, 2014, with the taglines, "Mankind was born on Earth, it was never meant to die here. The end of Earth will not be the end of us. Go further, and mankind's next step will be our greatest." So, good generic taglines for the movie. Doesn't give away too much of what happens in the overall plotline. But the summary of it actually does provide a good amount of information in that a team of explorers travel through a wormhole in an attempt to find a potentially habitable planet that will sustain humanity. So, good summary overall. A little bit of backstory is that the planet Earth is falling apart. Basically, dust storms have been hurting the crop, and so it was a matter of how to save humanity and get people off planet, and how or basically what people and scientists are doing to take care of that. So as always, I'll have a link to the IMDb profile so you can get the full cast list, and then the Wikipedia review or overview of it. It received a Rotten Tomato score of 74%, so generally well received. I thought it was actually better than that rating, but still, it's worth seeing. I mean, if the only one thing that I know might turn people off to it is the length of it. It was around 169 minutes of memory serve, so almost 3 hours long, but 3 hours that were well worth it. It was presented well and in a very epic manner, and provided the good transitions throughout the story to keep the story moving along. I'll also have a link this particular episode to a poem by Dylan Thomas. It is actually the one titled "Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night." It is, it's a bit of information that is presented, actually I'm not sure exactly how early in the movie, I only want to say about an hour in, but it is when Matthew McConaughey's character is taking the other scientists and they take off from Earth. So I forget exactly how far into the movie that was, but if you go into the movie, or if you have not seen the movie yet, or if you have, definitely read the novel or read the poem. It's relatively short, but it is actually a good back end into, or a good read as far as going into the movie and the general premise, and as far as the motivations for the characters. And namely, I want to say two of the characters in particular, which I'll get to in the as I go through the episode, but definitely worth reading. It does provide a little bit more context as far as the motivations for the various characters. So with that, I'll jump into the insights for this particular movie. And so to start it off, let's use these big rockets for our secret space program. So when we find out that, or when Matthew McConaughey's character, with the help of his daughter, realized that NASA is working in secret to develop, or they've been working on a space program to monitor and look out for various planets that are habitable for humans via a mysterious wormhole that was discovered near the planet Saturn. They're still using big rockets to, and like this, your standard rockets to get the spacecrafts into space. And I was thinking that if their launch site is supposed to be a big secret and they're still launching these rockets, wouldn't people figure out that that's that they're first of all there, and second of all that the money that they want, that everybody else wants to use, is being filtered to these space, to the rockets and the NASA program still. They tried to explain it as it was a pain to budget whatever they need to get into the program, which could be used elsewhere as far as on-Earth resources, farming, education, and all of that stuff. But to me, when I thought about it, it didn't seem like it was, it had gone far enough, in that this was one of the few points of the movie where it actually bothered me a little bit, that if they're still using all of these rockets, that would, like, wouldn't people have a cow because they're still sending these rockets, unless it had been that much time since the last time that they had launched. But it seemed like a lot of resources to be using and not enough explanation as to how they were being used there. Next up, Data didn't need an emotion chip, he just needed a humor chip. So the robots in the movie, the AI HAL 9000 style robots, were actually a definite plus in the movie. They were a very good add-on. They were able to help in places that the humans weren't able to work on, and they were basically like the R2-D2s of the of this movie, in that they helped out. They didn't really need to go beyond their means for help, and they were basically, they're treated as equals but used as sidekicks, so they have particular uses, as did everyone in the movie. So essentially they were treated as equals, and that's kind of, it kind of reminded me on one hand of they were R2-D2 because R2 was a helpful droid and had a good sense of humor and was treated as an equal to everyone who he was around, and the same thing in this case. But basically, and the thing that brought, that I enjoyed, was that they were able to tune down the humor or sarcasm chip in the robot. So if 80% was too much, they could tone it down to 70, 80, or 70, 60, 50. And they brought that up at the end of the movie too, that, and that interaction between Matthew McConaughey and the, I believe it was a TARS model that he recovered, and that it was, basically he knew that for him, the 60% level of humor was about right for him. So it actually worked out nicely, and it was a definite plus in the movie. And it would have translated nicely over into Data, where rather than have a full range of emotions to make him more, a little bit more human, maybe focus all of that work into the humor chip. But next up, on the lines of the controlling mechanisms for the robots, custom parameters in this movie work because HAL 9000 had a security clearance conflict of interest. So I had a vague recollection of the overall themes and how 2001 A Space Odyssey went, but the one thing that stands out and is probably the most iconic point of the movie is that HAL 9000 has its own agenda, and didn't, from my memory at least, didn't seem to have a big enough sense of humor, or something went wrong in the programming to the point where it took over and the humans were in jeopardy. But in this case of TARS, it did make note that there was a, I think, I forget if the 90%, 10% was for the humans or for the robot, but there, it did say up front that it had, or maybe it was 80%, that there was so much information it could give, but a certain amount that was classified and it was not able to give, and they were, and everyone seemed okay with that, and they said that it's going to be only a problem if it, if they have to run into that kind of problem where they need that information. But it worked out well. The robot helped where needed to, and didn't at least seem to be hiding anything. Maybe in the deleted scenes or Blu-ray extra content, we'll learn more. But it actually seemed to work nicely in this movie. There was a good balance of humorous seriousness, helpfulness, getting the job done, and all of that good stuff. But later on in the movie, we learned that Dr. Mann was the head scientist, of basically the lead on the project, and basically the project to find the various hospitable planets by going through the wormhole and figuring out which ones work the best. And by the time this character is... basically the climax of the plot line for Dr. Mann, we know what happens to him, but since it is in the vicinity of the black hole that they are near and the planet that they're researching, I actually got to thinking over the course of the climax of his of what he had done, that Elysium was actually prison time for Dr. Mann. This, if you go through the cast list, you know that Matt Damon is the one who plays his character, and he actually does it very well. It's a good portrayal. Well, I mean, I don't know of who, but he plays the doctor very well. He has a good range of emotions as far as all the time he had spent alone, hiding the information that he had, sharing information that he had, all of that stuff. And I got to thinking that essentially his portrayal seemed good enough to the point where Elysium might actually work in an alternate reality. Especially since since we have the gravity box towards the end of the movie, actually, for me, it's a bit of a stretch as far as alternate realities, but it just jumped into my mind that Elysium may have been a result of the emotions that played into his particular character by going through the warp, through the black hole. And Matthew McConaughey's character had his... because he focused, or actually let me rephrase that, when Dr. Mann says that in death you see the person or things that you are thinking about at the time or that you care about most, so that's how Matthew McConaughey was able to go into that particular thing. And I figure that maybe Dr. Mann, because of his violence or because of his need to take over humanity, that's the whole plot line or his point of view behind Elysium. So a little bit of oddity there for me, but overall a good acting there. And so to round it out, because Incept Station doesn't quite roll off the tongue. So at the end of the movie, we have Matthew McConaughey's character coming or waking up in the space station out orbiting around Saturn near the wormhole. And when he wakes up, eventually at that point, he learns that the station was named Cooper Station. He thinks it's about him, but it was actually named after his daughter. And when he's looking out the window, we see some children playing some basketball in an environment, or we see that it is the tube, what I assume is a gravity generator. But initially, before we get that view of the whole station, to me, it hit me that it actually reminded me a lot of Inception, when we have Ellen Page's character turning up the city and making changes in the Inception world. So I got to thinking that maybe Incept Station actually wouldn't work in this case, just because it's a bad name that doesn't really work that well. So to summarize the movie, gravity is the key to ESP. So throughout the whole movie, we learned that gravity was an issue, or the issue that caused essentially the climate change and all the changes to the planet throughout the world, and somehow it was related to the wormhole because it allowed exploration to other galaxies and across space and time. And that is actually the effects of that actually came back, and that's how the characters learn about multiple dimensions, in that what everyone initially assumes is that it's human or aliens that are talking through the fourth and fifth dimensions, which humans are not able to perceive, but it is actually humans who are talking through the fourth and fifth dimensions and using gravity as a means to provide messages, namely through the dust patterns and the various books. And that's something that Matthew McConaughey is able to figure out with TARS later on in the movie, and provide that information. Now, TARS was unable to figure out why the information worked how it did, but McConaughey was able to figure out, because of his conversations with the other doctors, namely Anne Hathaway, that because they had traveled through space and that where they were going, time was relative, that the effects that he used with gravity would affect everyone on Earth in the present time, even though it was time later on. And since time had passed, that's kind of how, or basically he had set up the building blocks for his daughter to figure out the messages later on and help save everybody. So I give the movie a real score of 100% because to start off, it was, or it did seem, at least to me in my naive science listening, that they use reasonable space terminology and jargon, so it didn't seem like they were going overboard with how they were explaining things, what they were doing. The thing that I liked the most is that they had the gravity generator on their ship when they were going to the wormhole, so that's how they were able to walk on the ship. They had decent enough docking procedures and transitions from having gravity to no gravity worked out well. So I actually really enjoyed that. It didn't really take me out of the movie. Nothing seemed to not make sense, unless it's something I don't know. But to me, it didn't seem like it was too far outside the realm of believability. They even it were had a they even explained the wormholes, which helped make sense to me quite a bit. The other positive was that they combined the movies Gravity and 2001 A Space Odyssey. So, while I haven't had a chance to see Gravity, reading the descriptions of it and the plot lines and all of that, it seemed like the events that happened in Gravity could have been, it could be a prequel to, or preceding events to, the events of this movie. And it kind of brings 2001 A Space Odyssey into the current century, or the current, or to the present day, basically, not necessarily here, but essentially it seemed like 2014 A Space Odyssey, because I mean it, they tied in the poem by Dylan Thomas with the events of the movie, so comparing our humanity with technology and where we can go from there, and the limits and extents and how far we can go with our current understanding of things. So a good combination there. And so that leads me into the final point, in that it's a cinematic explanation of Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night. So we see the various characters and their emotional state of mind. So Matthew McConaughey cares about his daughter and wanting to be able to continue to protect her for as long as he can. Anne Hathaway's pursuit of love across space and time and what she would do to be happy that way. And Dr. Mann's basically keeping his eye on the what he perceived as a prize of starting anew and starting all over again. So three different points of view, but to the point that they needed to figure out exactly what they needed to do to figure out how to save everybody and not keep their minds closed to alternate points of view and keeping things in perspective. And we see that in the final scenes, as far as the bookshelf, or Matthew McConaughey behind the bookshelf, and when we see his daughter's extended family all the years later. The only negative I could find is maybe I couldn't understand, or maybe I didn't really pick up on this at the start of the movie, was the robot droids and what their overall purpose was, because I think it was essentially navigation and taking over. They had a purpose later in the movie as far as docking the ships with the gravity generator, but overall I'm not sure exactly what their whole point in the movie was otherwise. It's not a negative to me in the overall scheme of things, because they were useful. They may have been the whole controlling the ship and the plan B side of things, but I wasn't entirely sure, so I think I may have missed something on that front. The only other problem I had was that everyone seemed to explain gravity, or it was the overuse of the word gravity more than anything else. So I think it was more of the rapid just use of the word gravity, which kind of bothered me, but not too much of a big deal. But by the end of the movie, to me, it seemed to work itself out, and it actually explained a whole lot of things. So if you're like me and that kind of bugged you throughout the movie, all I'll say is that it answers itself by the end of the movie, so do not worry too much about that. And so to round out the review, this isn't actually anything related to the positives or negatives. It's a personal thing, side of things, where I actually thought that the volume in the movie and the mixing of the audio was kind of unusual. So it was awkwardly loud, awkwardly soft. But more often than not, it was really loud and it was hard to understand certain points in the movie. So I actually wasn't sure why that happened. At first, I thought it was the theater that I had. I wanted to say maybe set the volume too loud so the speakers had trouble keeping up with the changes and the pitches in the movie, but reading a little bit online, it turns out that that was done on purpose, and that's it was mixed exactly how it should have been done. So I might have to go into look into this a little bit more. As I said earlier, this was news that I read a little bit before I started recording, so it's still new information, but apparently Nolan and the mixing crew did that on purpose. I probably more for effect than anything else, but it was a little bit unusual. I mean, it did play well as far as when they were entering the atmosphere and the changes in the climate of the various planets they were on, but there were certain parts where the audio did seem kind of weird. So I forget the guy who plays Alfred in Batman, but his character, when he was dying, I basically missed half his sentence, so I wasn't exactly sure what he said or what his tips were, unless that was on purpose. But if you find that the audio is kind of weird, maybe unusually loud and hard to understand, that was, I guess, done on purpose, and that comes from Christopher Nolan. So we'll see exactly why that was done or what the point of that was, but as far as I could tell so far, it was done for effect. But so that's actually kind of why I'm not holding it against the theater. But that kind of bugged me and the people I went with. So there's that answer for that. But that is actually all for this particular episode of Real Insight. If you want to, let's say you're going to be watching Gravity as a recap before watching this movie, or watch 2001 A Space Odyssey, and you want to make sure you have great sounding audio, be sure to check out our friends over at Tweaked Audio. They have 7 gray styles and 7 gray colors, so if you want to have white headphones that match the ships in 2001 A Space Odyssey, or green or blue or whatever colors they offer, they have a variety of styles to help you with that. All their headphones are also noise reducing, so you hear more of what you're listening to and less of the outside world, so you can be sure you'll catch everything in whatever you're listening to. And they're very durable, so if you listen to them or if you use them while you're at work, at home, out for a walk, they are all very durable, so you can use them all over the place. And they have microphone and non-microphone versions as well, so you can use them to talk on the phone or just have regular ones to listen to podcasts and music, watch movies, whatever. So they have all sorts of different styles. So be sure to visit geek-io.com/tweaked and use the promo code GEEK at checkout. That's GEEK, and you'll also get an extra 1/3 off your order to save some money as well. So we thank them for their support, and we hope you show them your support as well. That's geek-io.com/tweaked and the promo code GEEK to save some money on your brand new headphones. But if you want to get in touch with me, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 714-451-6574. You can find me on Twitter at PatelN01. If you want to support the show, be sure to check out the Year 1 and Year 2 ebooks at author.patelN01.com. If you want to support the show and the network as well, you can visit us on Patreon at patreon.com/geekio. There's plenty of rewards. You can help remove ads in all of our shows, expand the network, all of that good stuff. So we thank you in advance for supporting us that way as well. That's patreon.com/geekio. And of course, so coming up over the next few weeks, next week for the Thanksgiving week in the United States, I'll be doing the review for the Ken Burns documentary, The Roosevelts. Otherwise, after that, I'll have the review for Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides and the Star Wars novel Tarkin, with a special feature in there as well. We'll see what else comes up. I believe the third Hobbit movie, Battle of the Five Armies, is coming out in December, so if I have a chance to check that out, I'll do that review as well. But at least for the next 3 weeks, we have a few The show's ready already, so look out for that. But that is all for this particular episode of Real Insight. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.